Hello, and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. I hope you are doing well. I myself am doing fine, but I am tired. I'm tired. You know, I'd like to say this publicly, here and now, so everybody knows. If any of my old high school teachers are listening to this podcast, and it's not impossible that some of you are, I would like to say now, I'm so sorry. I had no idea the kind of work that you have to go through to set up an actual curriculum and to teach us ungrateful, simpering teenagers. It's a lot of work. It's a lot more work than I thought it would be. It's good work, and it's fun work, and it's creative work. You know, and I finish my day, and I leave, I think, wow, I actually did something interesting today, and that's good. But, gods, I'm tired. And if any of you are high school students now listening to this, and it's not impossible that some of you are, thank your teacher. Just go to school tomorrow and say to your teacher, thank you for the work that you do. Because believe me, your teacher has to do a lot of work. Otherwise, the class would just fall apart. Even a mediocre teacher still has to put in a lot of work and a lot of creative energy. So that's all I'm saying on that. That's it. I'm not going any further there. But, oh, I'm tired. My cat is sleeping on the bed, mocking me. Anyway, last week I gave you a clue as to this week's book, as I always do. It is by the man who killed Pluto. And my dear sister guessed it right, that it is Neil deGrasse Tyson. And his book is The Pluto Files. Here's a question for you. What was the biggest story of 2006? Was it the arrest of the shampoo bombers in England who made all of our lives miserable? Small fries. The first World Baseball Classic? Yawn. Whatever. The death of Don Knotts? Nothing. Now, as interesting as they were, none of these generated nearly as much public interest and argument as the much-ballyhooed demotion of Pluto by the International Astronomical Union in August of 2006. Poor little Pluto, hanging out there on the edge of the solar system, got bumped down to dwarf planet, rousing much ire from people all across the United States. And in a way, Neil deGrasse Tyson bears some responsibility for this. To be fair, stripping Pluto of its designation as a planet was never on his agenda. No matter what the angry elementary school students may have thought, Tyson had no beef against Pluto. Although, to be fair, he did say, oh, Pluto had it coming. He said that publicly many times. But it was just that Pluto had the bad fortune to be an oddball planet. And Tyson was working on the redesign of the Rose Center for Earth and Space in the American Museum of Natural History in New York. Whether he wanted to or not, and I'm pretty sure he didn't, he became the public face of this issue, one which just gripped the country. And you know, that in itself is weird. Because Americans, and I love my country people, but Americans are not the most scientifically literate of people. You know, sure, we like to use the fruits of science, but most people don't really pay attention to things like astronomy unless it's a shuttle launch or a pretty Hubble picture. And what's more, the public in general has never really gotten involved in matters of taxonomy. If you went up to someone in New York City and said, hey, the scientific community is thinking about revising the nomenclature regarding the classification of anaerobic bacteria, well, they would probably just walk away swiftly, looking back a few times to make sure the crazy person isn't following them. But tell them that the IAU is planning to demote Pluto, and you have a firestorm. So this book is not so much about Pluto itself, but it's about our relationship with that weird little ball of ice and rock. Tyson takes us through our history with Pluto, from its discovery back in 1930 to its demotion back in 2006, and tries to figure out just what it is that has endeared it so to the American public. It is very much an American thing. Other people don't care. Americans are the ones getting our panties in a bunch about this. So one possibility, of course, is the fact that Pluto was an American discovery. Percival Lowell was the one to start the hunt, and Clyde Tombaugh finally found it. Now, while the name was suggested by a teenage British girl, everything else about the discovery of Pluto was American, and that was a point of pride. There are only three non-classical planets in the heavens, and we had claim to one of them. So even if the average American doesn't know the history of Pluto's discovery, we still have a certain love for it. Despite its diminutive size, Pluto has loomed large in the American imagination. You know, perhaps there's something of the underdog love in there, too, right? Americans love to see the little guy win. And if you look at a lot of the pro-Pluto artwork from 2006, the theme of big planets ganging up on a little one was very popular. And as odd as this perception might seem from a scientific standpoint, I think a lot of Americans were supporting Pluto because it was being pushed down by the man, as it were. And so the country went a little nuts. Newspapers, blogs, websites, even sports reporting got their digs on Pluto, the Pluto controversy. There was something for everyone in this story, and everyone who could manage a Pluto reference did so with gusto. So it was a mixed blessing, to be sure. The American public was finally excited about astronomy, but it was the excitement of a bar fight rather than the highbrow intellectualism that many astronomers might have preferred. What was also interesting about this book was the look at the professional arguments that went on as well. Dispelling the dispassionate image of the astronomer, professionals got really worked up about this on both sides of the issue. Grown men and women, many of whom were well-versed in many aspects of astronomy, spoke passionately about Pluto. Some called on our sense of tradition and cultural memory, acknowledging that while Pluto may be an oddball, he's our oddball. Others were more than happy to throw Pluto into the Kuiper Belt with the other icy mudballs. So often, science, capital S, is assumed to be some monolithic entity that describes the world with a unanimity of voice. It's supposed to be dispassionate and rational, and we don't really think about the reality of scientific progress. To use the analogy often given to marriage, science is like a duck, stately and sure on the surface, but with a whole lot of work going down below. The history of science is full of more passion, debate, and anger than you might suspect. In order to decide the issue, symposia were convened, meetings were held, and finally, the International Astronomical Union was forced to do something that had never occurred to anyone before. Precisely define what is and is not a planet. And in case you're wondering, the definition is actually quite simple. It has to, 1, orbit the sun, 2, be big enough to have attained a spherical shape, technically known as hydrostatic equilibrium, and 3, it has to have cleared out its orbit. Now, Pluto fulfills the first two requirements, but badly fails the third. Therefore, by the new rules, it is not a planet. They created a new designation, dwarf planet, including Ceres in the asteroid belt, and Haumea, Makemake, and Eris out past Pluto. The public may not like it, but that's how it is. Tyson points out, by the way, that this is not the first time we've done such a reclassification. With the discovery in the mid-19th century of objects orbiting between Mars and Jupiter, a new class had to be invented in order to keep the number of planets from rocketing into the thousands, and so we have asteroids. The Pluto case is quite similar. Long after Pluto was discovered, more objects, similar in nature to Pluto, were discovered nearby, some of them even bigger than Pluto was. The region of rock and ice was named the Kuiper Belt, and if Pluto were discovered today, it would most certainly be named as part of it. As much as it really pains me to say it, the decision to reclassify Pluto was, I think, the right one. And at least Tyson and I have revised the planet mnemonic the same way. I was really happy about this. My very educated mother just sent us nachos. I can't tell you how happy I am that I was thinking on the same wavelength as Neil deGrasse Tyson. So the rise and fall of Pluto is an interesting story, and it's a lesson for science educators. No matter how bad it may seem for science in the United States, people can still be surprisingly passionate about scientific topics. It's also a warning against resistance to change. With all that we are learning about the solar system, to just rattle off a list of planets and be done with it is insufficient. There are so many other ways to look at it now, so many other ways to group the hundreds of bodies out there, that perhaps Pluto really is more comfortable out with the other trans-Neptunian objects, with its own kind, as it were, instead of being shoehorned in with 8 other guys that it really doesn't have anything in common with. Ultimately, of course, you know, Pluto doesn't care what we call it. That point was often made on both sides of the argument, and they're right. We could call it Lord Snuggy Pants the Fourth, and it would just keep doing what it does out there in the cold and the dark. But it's important for us, and not just because science needs things to be organized so we know what we're talking about. Being able to reclassify Pluto is an indication of the breadth of our knowledge. Had we not made such progress since the 1930s, Pluto's classification would never have been in doubt. The demotion of Pluto is a sign of our amazing achievements over the last 80 years. We have not lost a planet. We have gained understanding. So in the end, the great Pluto debate is one that we should look back upon fondly. So let me give you a quote from the book, and then I have a little story to tell. Tyson writes, "It's always a little scary when the person who hired you calls you up and asks, 'What have you done?'" It's a great quote. I hope for that day someday. But when I originally posted this, it was on my LiveJournal account, which is pretty much where the first drafts of all of my reviews go. And I wasn't expecting anything. You know, my friends might read it and, you know, they might enjoy it. There's a little clip from The Daily Show up there where Tyson is called the Marauder of the Cosmos. I got this strident reply to this from another LiveJournal user, who runs a Pluto website. She has a Pluto blog, she has a Pluto page, and she is pissed off. She wrote this long piece about how it was a bad decision, it was a bad vote by the IAU, that there's no reason to declassify Pluto, and there's no reason to limit us to, you know, 8 planets or 9 planets. Why not simply have a third class of planets, the terrestrial planets, that's Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, the Jovian planets, that's Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, and then the dwarf planets, which is everything else. There's some flaws in that argument. You know, for example, Haumea, Makemake, and Eris. Eris is nothing like Pluto or Haumea or Makemake, so really they should not be put together either, but I'm not an astronomer. Regardless, it was a vehement comment. We had a little back and forth exchange. It was kind of entertaining, really, but I've never seen anybody ever, ever comment, with the possible exception of my bad beginning review where people got very pissed off at me. So yeah, people are really, really invested in this topic. As I said, I think it was the right one. I'm a big fan of organizing information and making sure that everything is clear in terms of what we call things and how we look at things. And it's fine to say we have 13 or 100 or 500,000 objects orbiting the sun, but we need to classify them so we know what they are in order that we can teach people in an easy way. To do that, we have classified our planets, and I think that the reclassification of Pluto, that was right. Now, keep in mind, in 2015, in just a few years from now, the New Horizons probe is going to make it out to Pluto. And this is launched even before the decision was made, so it is going to study Pluto. At that time, we may learn something about Pluto that will force us to reconsider. And that, my friend, is the beautiful part about science. Science can always be wrong. I know with these emotional arguments, we don't like to admit that it's possible, but it's true. Science could always be wrong. New Horizons could learn something out there that makes us go, oh, what were we thinking? Of course Pluto's a planet, and we'll put it back. Nothing is forever. So this commenter, she was right. The debate isn't over. We'll revisit it in a few years. So I have gone on long enough. I will link to her blog, actually, so you can check out what her arguments are as well. Again, this is science. But like I said, I really enjoyed the book. It was good fun. And Neil deGrasse Tyson is just one of my favorite modern scientists. He is such a cool guy. And I hope he retweets when I put this up on Twitter so he can listen and hear just how cool he is. Because you're cool, Mr. Tyson. All right, I'll stop now. I'm sorry. Anyway, next week is the last Thursday in the month. And you know what that means. It is time for the Dresden Files. We will be looking at the most recent book minus one, which is Turncoat. And your trivia question for this is pretty simple. A little bit of Wikipedia will do it for you. What is the real name of the Merlin? There you go. Believe me, it's not hard. I found it in, you know, no time. So answer me that. Come back next week for a little bit of Dresden Files. I know you'll love it. You always do. And with that, I will leave you to whatever it is you've been doing, and I will see you next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelabyrinthlibrary.blogspot.com, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you'd like to recommend, I'd be happy to hear it. If you would like to send me some email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes or become a fan on Facebook. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week, and until then, keep reading.